from stpetecatalyst.com.
Hey there, it's the Catalyst Sessions. I'm Bill DeYoung from the St. Pete Catalyst. Thanks so much for joining us this evening. My guest today is Duncan McClellan, who is a world-renowned art glass maker, a glass artist, although he's not made of glass, who's been in this area for 10 or 11 years now and made all kinds of strides into making this the Glass Coast, which is the first thing I want to talk to you about. Hey there, buddy. How are you?
Oh, doing fine. Thanks for having me on.
You have the domain name glasscoast.com. Does that still belong to you?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So, which is great. And I know that you've been out there as part of the movement to make this become the Glass Coast for lots of reasons for a while now. Tell me why you did that and what you mean by the Glass Coast.
Well, Glass Coast, we have a significant amount of glass entities, places, artists to see here. And one of my goals was to outreach throughout the country to get groups to travel here, heads, beds, come in and see all the different entities, all the different venues that we have. And I was successful. Last year I went out, gave two talks, one in Phoenix, one on the other coast of Florida. And for this past March, we had planned two groups coming to visit with 40 each. And that was just from the beginning. So if I could replicate maybe 10 talks a year in my thinking at the time, we could get a significant amount of people coming here, getting hotels, restaurants, buying things, enjoying what St. Pete is.
Does that come naturally to you, Duncan, to be, you know, an ambassador, to be the glass ambassador? I'll try and jam those words together at some point. The glass, you know, in other words, between what you have and the Imagine and the Jehovah Collection and the other places around here, there's a lot of glass art here. But not everybody's going out crossing the country and raising the flag, come and visit this place. To your mind, is like Visit St. Pete, Clearwater not doing enough? I mean,
well, that's
why do you need to do it, is what I'm saying.
I don't feel that they're giving enough emphasis on the arts, that we really do have something to sell in tourism here. Uh-huh. And we really need more budget. And just like I started my business, as well as our educational charity,
yeah,
what you do is you fund it yourself, you go out there, you start some things, other people see what's happening, and then they buy into it. But just going out asking people for money and effort without you having built something, you're not going to get traction. So that was my goal with glasscoast.com, is to see that we could build up that site and build up the artists that are artists, venues, galleries that are included in on that site. And we've funded every DMG, our gallery has funded everything to date. Although John Collins, Trey, and Stuart have been very helpful in putting a group together.
Sure.
To be able to see if we can't take it further.
Well, it takes time, doesn't it? Yeah.
Especially in the new environment we have, we now have new priorities, and trying to do something collectively when you're trying to keep your house from burning down doesn't work right now.
Right. Yeah. So I wanted to talk with you about your personal journey, which we did an interview in the Catalyst. I want to say it was 2 years ago, man, but it's been a while. And the fact is that the facts of history don't change. I'm clicking around here madly trying to bring things up. I have some pictures I want to look at. You're from New York, but didn't you say you spent most of your younger life in Orlando? Yeah.
Oh yeah, I grew up in Orlando.
Okay.
And came to Tampa when I was able to leave high school early. So I got a scholarship to go to HCC. And so I booked it to Tampa.
I want to back up for a minute, though, Duncan, because you told me that your dad was in marketing and PR in Orlando. And I don't know, folks, if you know this about Duncan McClellan, but both Walt Disney and Colonel Sanders had dinner at the family home when he was young. Any memory? I mean, nobody else has a story quite like that. Can you share anything there? I mean, I guess Uncle Walt was starting to buy up the land around there at the time, huh?
Exactly. And it was my dad's job to keep it kind of quiet. And to really suppress any kind of news getting out because they needed to buy enough land to be able to do what they wanted to do. That was interesting. We were sworn to secrecy. I don't think I ever told anybody until I was a teenager.
Now it can be told. So he obviously worked closely with the Disney company. It was kind of, that's
right. Particularly in the advanced portion of it. Not so much after they acquired all the
land. Talking like 64, 63, 64. Yeah. And you were just a tot, just a little kid. And Colonel Sanders, I mean, how cool is that? You know, young people today don't even know who Harlan Sanders was.
Yeah, right. But we had Mr. Clean over.
I bet you had to keep the place like spick and span before he got there, right?
Right.
Can you imagine having Mr. Clean over in the time of COVID, you know? Oh, my God. Listen, you told me that it was at the New York World's Fair in 64 that you first saw someone glass blowing. And went, that's cool. Is that accurate, that story?
Well, it was pretty accurate. Dad came home. He always liked to surprise us. And he said, next week we're going to New York. I had seven brothers and sisters.
Wow.
And we had an old Valiant station wagon. And he said, next week I want you to see the Pietà. It's going to be at the New York World's Fair, and I want you to see it.
Yeah.
So Dad's idea of going to see that was to drive the 26 hours straight, see it, get in the car, and come back. Well, even having a tinkle can in the back when we'd have to crawl over
seven kids
to go pee in the back.
Oh, man.
But my mom would always want to stop. So we would stop at South of the Border, where we'd stop to dig Indian arrowheads, and then we stopped at Glencoe Glassworks. And previously, on another trip, we had lost my sister. She was left at a gas station, and we didn't realize it till 200 miles later. So
that's a traumatic.
When we went on trips, we had to call. We were by number. And they kept calling my name, my number, and I wouldn't show up because I kept hiding to watch the glass blowers.
Wow. So you went to Glencoe, and that was the thing that, I mean, was that a life-altering moment or just as a kid, something, boy, that's cool? I mean, or did that just stick with you forever?
Well, I think that's common with all of us. There's that moment in time in our lives where something – you see something, you do something, it clicks. You don't know if you'll ever be involved in it. You don't know if you ever, but you knew that was the coolest thing you had ever seen. Well, same thing for me, but I didn't get to start blowing until I was 30 years old.
Yeah, so you said, but you had a lot of jobs in between. A lot of jobs. You're a graphic designer. You were, I think you made leather belts or something, as I recall.
Right.
You were almost a restaurateur. So what changed? Was it like, hey, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I saw somebody making, you know, art glass. I'm going to go try. What changed? How did that all happen?
Well, I'd always been involved in our family. All of us made something.
Yeah.
You know, we did some kind of art form or poetry or sculpture or something.
Mm-hmm.
Photography was a big thing. So, you know, having worked in leather when I was 14, I had a line of belts that I sold to stores.
Wow.
When I was in my later teens, I worked in clay. I wasn't really that good or satisfied by it.
Uh-huh.
And then I went into working for a circus, doing some graphic design, and then came back to Tampa to work with friends of mine that were opening a cosmetic chain.
Yeah.
Because I knew something about color. They wanted me involved, and I bought in, and we started some retail stores out of the Tampa airport.
Well, Duncan, we let me stop you there. I mean, were you always looking for the thing that clicked with you most? I mean, this is a lot of moving around. You're an advanced man for a circus, I think you told me.
Yeah, exactly.
You weren't riding elephants or walking the wire. But, I mean, was it sort of that long kind of lusty search for the thing that's going to feel right to me? I'll try this, I'll try that, I'll try that. Or was it just happened that way when you?
No, well, quite honestly, everything I did felt right to me.
Yeah.
So working in the restaurants, doing the graphic design, starting the retail, it all felt right.
Uh-huh.
But in the latter part of the retail end, I started realizing that I like creating the retail. I like developing the business, but I don't necessarily love running them.
Yeah.
And so as my interest, and I started taking a few lessons, and as my interest came up in glass, I found myself bringing my glass into the store, working on it during the day as I'm also doing my other job. And then at a point I went, you know, you're 30 years old. If you don't give it a shot now, you'll never give it a shot. You're selling off your retail stores. So I bought myself 2 years of time.
Yeah.
And I figured after 2 years, if nothing clicked, I would open another retail or start something new. Mm. But I wanted to give it a shot.
So what did you do? You were in Hillsborough County by then. So
yeah, I saw a little classified ad in the paper that they were giving lessons down in Ebor.
Yeah.
And Dean James was the guy. And I went to him and said, I want to sign up, but I'm a highly addictive personality. And if I can't rent time after, I really don't want to get involved in this because this is something I really want to do. And I don't want to just take a 3-week course. And he said, no problem.
Wow.
I'll rent your time. Well, I called him every 2 weeks for 2 years. And he would tell me, call me back in 2 weeks. Getting frustrated, I was going to New York to do buying. And I went, there's got to be a place in New York. And I found the New York Experimental.
Yeah.
And that's where it was the best. What Dean did was the best thing for me because I would have never been able to learn some of the techniques I've learned or the people I've met without having that experience. So it was great for me.
How long did you work at the Experimental? I mean, how long did this go on? Go flying back and forth as you were.
Well, it was like Teddy Roosevelt going on safari because I would send like 9 boxes up and then of my tools and color and everything else, like a whirlwind, be up there for 5 days because that's all I could afford, and then pack everything up. And that's how I met Chuck Books here in St. Pete.
Mm-hmm.
Because here I'm packing up my work, and two guys there said, hey, can we give you a hand? And then they see my address, and they were both from St. Pete. Len Neff, mm-hmm. who was the first glass artist in this area, and Chuck Books that built the first hot shop in this area in St. Pete. And that's where I started working after he built out the studio.
You eventually, okay, I'll fast forward a little bit. We'll go through, you know, the hard times. But eventually what you did, as I recall, was you started doing it full time. You started selling at art shows. And when do you realize that? I remember wondering this when I spoke to you, because it was the first time I met you. Now I can ask you, when do you realize while you're doing that, that your stuff is good enough to show people and attempt to sell to people? When does that moment happen?
Well, it's kind of what I mentor. You know, you have to be very proud of that piece before you're going to allow the public to see it.
Yeah.
But don't be so overly critical that you don't have it out there and you don't get feedback. One of the things that I was very lucky when I started out doing shows is that there'd be a first, second, third prize in the glass category, and there were only two glass artists. So there was a lot of very good things that I happened to me that way. And it allowed me to, because all those awards that you get are like mini grants. And it would allow me to do more work and learn and do more. And it was very, very helpful. I really think that the outdoor festival system is a really great system for artists. It hones you in a lot of ways.
Didn't you tell me once that I was in Boca or someplace where somebody with a bunch of money just walked by and said, "I'll take everything," or something like that? I mean, what's that story you told me once?
Well, I was at Coconut Grove for the first time, okay. And this guy, I'm setting up, this guy, it's 6 a.m, this guy looks down from his balcony, and he comes down in his bathrobe, and he says, "I would like these two pieces." And I said, "Sure." So we carried him up to, and he took him upstairs, and he came down with the check. And this time he was dressed, and he said, "Look, I redesigned my whole house I'm building, and I put in about 30 niches just for your work. So I want you to sell me 30 pieces." And I went, wait a minute.
Did you have 30 pieces?
That's not the way to buy art. Gene, his name was Gene. And Gene, yeah. I promise I'll fill them all. But let me do this over a period of several years. This way you're going to get the best I can give you. You'll have a varied, a better collection. And I'll put some loaners in, but they're loaners. You're not going to keep. We're going to get you. And he built a huge collection. And then about 4 years later, he decided to build a new house. And he sold it lock, stock, and barrel down to the pots and pans, but wouldn't sell the guy my artwork. He'd sell all the other artwork, but not that. And the guy said, "No, I want it. You built it for this." So he said, "Look, I'll introduce you to him." And he did. And I ended up filling those niches over a period of about 5 years. So that was a hell of a chance. Sale.
What is it for you about glass that say you had tried working in pottery before, working with clay, the other things you do? What is it about glass and is it the ability to create things that didn't exist before that are just fragile and the way they hold the light? I mean, it's a very general question. Why glass? Why did that do it for you? Why did that become your thing?
Well, that's a good question because, why does an artist pick a particular thing? Well,
right.
In my case, glass is so malleable and, it can be transparent. It can be translucent. It can be opaque. It can look very fluid. It can look very hard. It can look very soft. There's so many different things that can be used. It really is, in some ways, the most ideal material to work in because of the different ways it can be utilized. The drawback to glass is the expense in using the material. It's one of the most expensive mediums to work in. It's not just hot glass, it's warm glass, cold working. All of it is very expensive. And, you know, comparing it to other art forms, if I make a small mistake and I'm a painter, it's covered.
Tree painter.
And I make a small mistake in a piece, it's garden art in my garden. I can't even sell it. And I have a few examples of that. You know, perfect pieces, they're huge, but it's got a major, you know, a flaw that can't be utilized. So it's really something that I think glass artists love. That part of it is that heartbreak that happens when you're trying for it. You know, if it was always successful, what's the reward? Especially when you have glass is a team sport too, and it's not done singularly. During the GAS conference we had about a year ago, we had in one demonstration 21 people on the floor all working on the same piece.
Wow.
On different benches, different parts of the room, all bringing these parts. One poor guy had to turn the pipe back and forth for 4 hours, just keeping that piece hot. You know,
I just can't imagine the guilt trip, though, if you're the one guy out of the 20 or whatever who screws up. I dropped it. Everybody's, you know, the whole thing's gone. You can't, it's not like you can pick up the pieces and put it back together.
No, doesn't work.
Okay, I'd like to look at a couple of photos of the gallery. Duncan McClellan Glass, is it glass or glass and gallery? I'm never sure. I've heard you call it both things. Is Duncan McClellan glass? You tell me, what's your place called?
Glass kind of covers the whole concept.
Okay.
Because we fabricate, we do commercial things, we do things for outside of restaurants and schools, but we also do the artwork there as well.
You have the work of, yeah, you've got an incredible hot shop there in the school, which I want to talk about too. You've got the work of, 100 artists, including yourself?
Yeah, over 100 artists, quite internationally. In fact, the image that you're showing, that's Richard Jolly, one of the pillars of the entire glass movement. He is very unusual in that he makes his own glass and his own colors. Mm. And we just had a Zoom meeting with him, inviting our collectors from all over the world and doing studio tours. And that's something else we're doing. We have ones coming up dealing with artists in Australia. And even though this whole last 4 months have been a pivot, it's been really exciting how we can reach and communicate, quite honestly, better than we were before.
I mean, there's nothing tactile about it, though. You're not in a room with the work. You know, it's like dancing about architecture, right? I mean, you can only go so far. I used to say that writing about music, which I did for so many years, is a lot like dancing about architecture. It doesn't. How does that happen? How are the meetings going so well? I heard you tell that to Joe and Chris on the other the podcast that you did.
I will tell you that it has been. I'm encouraged by how successful it's been. Mm-hmm. Most of the clients that are purchasing things that both know our gallery very well and they know the artist in most of the times. And they know that if we sent them something and it wasn't what they had in mind, we would deal with that. You know, we would take care of that.
Sure.
But we are open. We are taking reservations so that some of the people that are here locally that have seen it on one of our Zoom meetings can make an appointment and come in and see it in person.
You're not open for someone to just walk in. I wasn't going to ask you this. You do it by appointment now.
Well, that's our preferred way because we like to have 15 minutes between guests to rewind. I do a full sanitation schedule in the morning. It takes about an hour, including a fog disinfectant machine. Yeah. And we like to be able to redo the handles, bathrooms in between guests. If people do show up at the door and we don't have a reservation at that time, of course, we're going to be accommodating.
Yeah.
We do require face masks. That's a city ordinance now, too.
Of course.
But we have totally redone the galleries to be touch-free and all kinds of touch-free disinfecting things around the property.
The stuff here I'm looking at, you know, I've been in there and I've toured the Chihuly and I've toured the Imagine Museum, of course. And what I like is that, I don't know, what do you call it, a docent tour or a guide? I mean, I could look at this and say, I mean, oh, this is beautiful, but I'd rather have someone there telling me about it, telling me how it was maybe created or about the artist. Do you do that as well?
Oh, that's very much part of our MO. I mean, part of our motto is that we're more than a gallery. And our focus, we're focused more on education. Out of our education, we make sales that keep us in business and keep us alive. But the first and foremost thing is that you have to educate. It gives a much better appreciation by the client. And even if they're not purchasing that day, it's something that sticks with them and they come back.
One more picture to look at, because and this kind of touches on that too. I mean, I know you have the school initiative, but the hot shop, I mean, look, people are fascinated. This picture is great. Is it open now? Are people working? I mean,
we have done, actually the last couple of days we had some filming being done. Mm-hmm. So Dan Alexander, our chief gaffer, basically was doing things mostly by himself with Lauren opening up the doors for him. So we're not doing a 21 team blowing right now.
Yeah.
We're concentrating on being safe, getting ready for the fall, and reconditioning. Each year, all the equipment, and you're only seeing about a third of it, has to be reconditioned. So it takes all summer long. We were just lucky that we didn't have to rebuild the furnace this year, because that is about 6 weeks of downtime and about $6,000. But this year, typically you do it every year. This year, the crucible was fine.
Well, we're close to the end here, but let's remind people that you are open by appointment. It's dmglass.com, and you're over in the Warehouse Art District, a former tomato packing plant, I seem to remember.
Right.
How many, what's your square footage of this? A big place, man.
Well, the gallery alone is 7,800. That doesn't count the sculpture gardens or the 5,000 square foot awning. And then the hot shop is about 2,400 square feet.
Yeah, I was there, the outdoor garden. You had a service when my friend Bob Andelman passed away out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was right before Mr. COVID came out and shook our hands.
Nice.
You know, well, it's good to know that you're doing okay, man.
Yeah.
And
thanks, Bill.
Like the rest.
I really appreciate it.
It's great talking to you, Duncan. We will see you. We'll see you again soon.
Okay, terrific. Take care of yourself.
Take care, my friend. Bye-bye.
Bye.
From stpetecatalyst.com.